Decatur Public Library. Today our guest is Mrs. Mildred England. Well, Mrs. England, I know you've done a great deal of travel in your lifetime, and I know that also that you have recently returned from a very exciting trip. And I thought that today we just have you tell us about this trip that you have recently returned from. Well, first of all, tell us where you went.
Well, with my husband, I had been to 6 continents and left clothes there on each of them. And I just wanted to visit the Antarctic. And I took his shirt. It was too heavy and too, for me, too big. And they said they would be glad to have it.
Did you leave the clothes on all these continents intentionally or accidentally? You did it just for fun.
Yes.
And of course, we should mention that your husband is no longer living now, so that you took this trip by yourself.
Yes.
Well, a trip to the Antarctica is not an ordinary experience, and I'd like to know first how you heard about this. What gave you the idea for going on this trip?
My son-in-law sends me the New Yorker, because he lives in Connecticut, which I appreciate. And there was an ad, David Campbell traveled, New York, limited, so it's a British company. Mm-hmm. So I wrote, and there were about 100 people on it, and half of them were from the Society expeditions out of Seattle, and half of us were signed up through Campbell of New York.
Mm-hmm. Well, of course, many people wouldn't want to take a trip like this. Why did you want to?
Well, you've been around the world, and you've been around each continent.
There are many other places to go.
South Pacific. And my husband took me to Greenland, and we got as far north as you could go with 76.7 in a ship. It was on a ship trip. Therefore, I was enthralled with mm-hmm. the ice cap. Therefore, I knew I wanted to go to the Antarctic. But Glenn didn't want to go with me.
Mm-hmm. So now that you were alone, you had mm-hmm. a chance to do it. I believe you had a background in science, too, didn't you? Or an interest, at any rate.
Yes, I taught biological sciences. And when I was teaching a course in what they call general science.
Mm-hmm. Well, why don't you tell us a little more about the trip itself, when you went and some of the details of it.
Well, I went in February, and it was a good thing to know how bad it was here in February. And of course, we were in the southern hemisphere, so it was summer. The wind was cold, about like it is here in March. It was cold in March, but sunny most of the time. Mm-hmm. And when you couldn't when we were just traveling over the sea, we walked around on the deck, because I've always walked a couple of miles a day. And we had passengers from all over the world and all ages, not just elderly people. Many young people, they don't seem to be marrying anymore. And at our table, we had a man from Germany, a woman from England that was working with refugees, one from Estonia, and 2 men that were, one of them Finnish and one Swedish. And then there were Canadian girls and Brazilians and some Japanese, all different races. And of course that was fun, from all different parts of the world. So it was always exciting. Mm-hmm. Every hour you had someone different to talk to.
Mm-hmm.
Then it was a real educational expedition, because mid-morning we had talks by 4 different scientists. None American. So they were slanted in their opinions of us.
Mm-hmm.
One young man from New Zealand, a Scottish man that was our bird man, and then we had one from Cuba, and one from Wales.
Mm-hmm.
As long as I'm talking about those scientists, I'd like to tell you this. They said that Americans forget very easily. They don't even think enough of Bird, that spent 5 months under the ice cap in the Antarctic, all frozen in, to even put him on a stamp. And they've already forgot about Perry that discovered the North Pole. But in England, they said, school children are never allowed to forget Robert Falcon Scott. Mm-hmm. Although he was second to the South Pole, they think that he is the greatest hero of all because he wrote his experiences, sent them home to Sir James Barrie, a writer, who made it into a little book called Courage, and all the British school children read that. But we forget mm-hmm. our great man. We would rather put on a stamp, Elvis Presley mm-hmm. and Bob Hope.
So you came back fired up with the idea that you should jog our memory about some of these
yes.
people and so on. Well, maybe you could tell us a little about the ship itself. A large one?
No, it held 120 passengers, but there were about 100. So naturally, we were lucky that we could keep our baggage, because there were two in a room, in those extra cabins. Mm-hmm. We didn't have to have them under mm-hmm. our feet. It was a German ship, and it was an icebreaker, but it could only break up 3 feet of ice 1 year of it. So you see, we didn't get to the Antarctic Circle, which would be 66 and a half. We only mm-hmm. got 65.4 because the ice was too thick. Mm-hmm. But where we paused, the furthest north that we were, was called Paradise Bay. And to me, it was a blue and a white world, wonder world, and it was my idea of heaven, above, below, and everywhere, and then ice. I thought it was like visiting heaven and being allowed to still be alive.
A really
it was filled with a feeling of euphoria.
Now you said north, but
south.
South. I thought you surely meant south.
I have been 66.
Yes.
I have been 76.7 north, but
this was south.
This was 65.04 south.
South.
Yes. Pardon me.
Well, that's all right. I just wanted to make clear that you were going in the other direction. Right. Well, that really must have been a very thrilling sight.
Now, the only rough place on this voyage was over the Drake Passage. Sir Drake, mm-hmm. for Francis Drake, named for him, because that's between the continents, the end of South America, and before the Antarctic Peninsula starts. But I didn't miss a meal.
Mm-hmm.
I ate lightly, and I did I had a dozen of those
Dramamine.
Yes, Dramamine. And I had six going and six mm-hmm. coming a day or two ahead. Now, on the ship, of course, beside the exercises, you could play bridge the days at sea. And I helped some with the yoga because, I like to keep in shape, and they had exercises for the women. And I got a chance to show some of the yoga that I've practiced right here in my own living room in Decatur with Lilius. Then we visited five bases on the Antarctic Peninsula. The Argentina base, the Chilean, the Polish, the Russian, and the U.S. Palmer base. Named for Nathaniel Palmer, that first sighted the Antarctic Peninsula in 1820.
Mm-hmm.
And now a replica of his ship, Hero 2, is there at the American base.
So the Americans haven't forgotten everything.
No. I thought that was good. Yeah.
But these governments that you've mentioned, each has established a base in the Antarctica to do experiments
yes.
and observations?
Oh yes, in different fish experiments mm-hmm. and penguins and whales and weather. Mm-hmm. Now, they're all very friendly except the Russians are a little standoffish, and so are the Argentinas. Now the Argentinas feel that the Antarctic Peninsula should belong to them because they're so close. Mm-hmm. And they're a small country, so they couldn't grab it all, but they bring women there a couple of months before they're going to bear a child, so they can say they've had children born mm-hmm. in Antarctica. See? Oh. And they also, now the Falklands want to belong and do belong to Great Britain, and they want to stay that way. But Argentina is, you know...
There's a kind of international issue there, isn't
yes,
there?
Yes, they want to kind of grab it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the reason that I was treated so wonderfully on the Falklands. A girl gave me this towel. They opened the museum for me. They all, and then one of the ladies that ran the Upland Goose invited me to tea. I think they liked my name.
Oh, yes, of course.
They were marvelous to me. And when they said they'd open the museum, mm-hmm. I'm in Clare of a wool office. They said they'd get it open by 12 for me. And I said, well, then I'll get some of the people. They were wandering all around. I said, I'll get some of my people. So I gathered up some people to come mm-hmm. to the museum, which was marvelous. Mm-hmm.
Well, they couldn't do any less for Mrs. England herself.
Oh, they were marvelous to me. Imagine, the girl wouldn't let me pay for this towel.
Oh, well, that was a very lovely souvenir.
It was a Sunday, and I couldn't get into the shop where I saw them, and she said I got one at home, so she brought it to me. So since then, they are going into winter when I got back. So since then, I sent her a pretty long-sleeved nightgown that I got right here that was being reduced right here in Decatur, and mailed it to her. Mm-hmm. It had ruffles here and here.
Yeah.
I knew that it was real flowery, very pretty.
Mm-hmm. Well, did you stop at each of these posts?
Yes, we stopped at each one for a tour.
Mm-hmm.
And they showed us what they were doing. Now, many of them are working with krill, and that's important.
Maybe you should explain what that is.
Well, they're a baby shrimp. And it used to be the food of the whales, especially the blue whale, which is almost extinct, and some of the others almost are. Even the humpback, this one, that jumps up out of the water. But since there aren't many whales anymore, there's a lot of krill, and so the penguins are increasing in numbers because they also eat it.
Mm-hmm.
And they've taken over whole islands, maybe a different kind, you know, on each island.
Is that bad or good, or does it matter?
Well,
how do these scientists feel about it?
If they get too many, you might have to move your base because it smells to high heaven. And the reason is because their enemy is the skua. Now, they would never think of God being on high because their enemy is on high. The skuas come down.
What are the skuas?
Well, they're those birds, you know, those big...
I'm sorry, I don't have
the big birds that are their enemy.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll be on this island, too.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll be watching babies.
Mm-hmm. Baby penguins.
Yes, maybe the parents have gone off to feed and collect on fishing, you see. And they'll swoop down all day, maybe lower and lower, and then nobody's come back by night, they'll grab the baby.
Mm-hmm.
Then some of the penguins get kind of messy in the front, the babies, you know, when their parents feed them, they regurgitate. They really need bibs. But one thing I want you to notice about the penguins, as I show you a picture, they have no fear in their eyes like our birds.
Mm-hmm. Because they don't know human beings.
Because they have no enemies on the land.
Mm-hmm.
They have something that grabs them in the ocean and something that comes down from above. But walking around, there are no enemies. So they have a gentle look about them. So I call this Gentoo penguin, the gentle penguin.
Mm-hmm.
And I bought this and had copies made for my friends. Then, of course, we saw fur seals and many other kinds of birds. And then a number of penguins. Now, I have visited where there are 8 different kinds of penguins. This includes South Africa and New Zealand as well. And the fur seal is better developed than the crab-eater seal that floats on cakes of ice. It has more developed feet. And one day I walked 5 miles with a young New Zealand scientist to see fur seals. And I was the only one my age that walked that far, and he complimented me.
Well, he should.
But I had good walking boots, and I walked all my life. I grew up in the Rocky Mountains. My husband and I walked 2 or 3 miles a day all our lives. My father and mother both walked. And we never gained weight.
So you have many advantages.
Yeah.
Well, you call these fur seals because their fur is valuable.
Yes.
Do people hunt them for
the fur? No longer. They're not allowed to be
hunted.
But we did see them on 2 different places, which was very nice.
Well, I believe you mentioned whales, too.
Well, we saw the humpbacks and the pilot whale, 2 or 3 different kinds. And whenever the captain announced the whales, they would slow the ship so that we could enjoy them, watch them as they, see, they dash through the, lift themselves above the ocean floor or ocean top. Above the waves. And then going across the Drake Passage, we saw the royal or wandering albatross. It's not an Antarctic bird, but it carried us across, and it never seems to bend its wings. You could just watch it. But all the time we were crossing that, I didn't mind if it was rough, like it was with us.
It floats in the air currents.
Yes. Now that is a black-browed albatross that is really in the Antarctic. And then that is a particular kind of penguin that has yellow hairs sticking out called macaroni. And the crab-eater seal. Now the fur seals, I guess, are everywhere, although I don't know. They seem to think those crab-eater that lie around on cakes of ice are only there in the Antarctic. They don't go to the north. But the whales go all around, all over the world, all the oceans. I bought some stamps, too, showing, here's a macaroni that has that
yellow whiskers.
Yellow whiskers, yeah. And the gentoo, which is a real sweet one. You can go right up to it, you know. They tell you not to touch it, though. A daily penguin is named after the wife of some Antarctic explorer. It is funny. It has cute movements, you know. It, well, it goes back and forth like this when it's full of food coming up to get its babies, you see. And you laugh at it. And then the emperor penguin is the only one that winters on the main continent itself, which we did. You have to go to McMurdo Sound, I think, to see those flying over from Australia or New Zealand. But they raise their babies and they stay together, you know, the fathers, to protect the eggs close together and hold the egg on their feet while the mother goes out to fish. And then when she comes back, just as the baby's about to be born, then he goes a long walk to the sea, and she feeds it, regurgitates as food for it. It was so exciting a voyage that I just thought I wanted to tell you about this, because as a child, my favorite fairy tales, you know, were about the Snow Queen. And I grew up in the Rocky Mountains, and I was in Denver, where there was always a great deal of snow, and I liked snow and cold weather.
Now, you started to tell us a little bit about the weather, but was it really cold down there? What kind of, how would the ordinary person think of the climate down there, or what you encountered?
Well, you should, there was a hood came with that, and I had that, and then some people put sweaters on.
Maybe we should describe this, since people won't be able to see it.
Oh, I had an orange jacket was given to us. On a from the tour group.
A kind of windbreaker jacket?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
And it's lightweight, but warm.
And you have all of these insignia on it, the patches that
yes,
show...
Yes, I paid a dollar for some of those.
Uh-huh.
Oh, the one from Poland and the one from Chile, the young man couldn't take any money because they're communist countries, but they wanted to trade, so I gave them one of them a mutual fountain pen and the other one a security. Those were my two savings and loans that helped me out. So that was fun, the Decatur touch.
Right. Uh-huh.
And then my postman, Rex Gallup, lent me the deer stocking suit that he bought for his wife.
Uh-huh.
And some days, as you see, I didn't really need anything but that. That would have been too warm,
mm-hmm.
especially walking. But you did need a good cover for your head, and they said bring plenty of scarves.
Uh-huh. Because of the wind.
Yes. Now, uh-huh. of course, I wasn't heavily burdened like some
mm-hmm.
people, because I don't take pictures.
Mm-hmm.
So I had nothing but...
So you bought the pictures.
Yes, mm-hmm. I bought.
Now, in this picture that we're looking at here, there isn't very much snow. I see a few little patches.
Well, the reason is because it's a volcanic island, and those that is black and red.
Mm-hmm.
Some of it's red, some of it's black lava. Because 3 years ago, it erupted,
mm-hmm.
blew the whole center out, and we're walking up to see the volcanic lake.
Mm-hmm. Was it beautiful? Or not very...
It's not kind of desolate.
Deception
Island.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't like Paradise Bay, uh-huh. which was all blue and white snow.
Uh-huh. Well, now, about what degree of temperature was it when you were going up to...
35 to 45, the whole
so
trip.
It wasn't really...
cold.
Most people would have the feeling that it might be... Say as cold as it was here last year in Decatur, but not nearly.
It was the southern end. It was summer, you see.
Uh-huh, right.
But you couldn't go without any coat.
Uh-huh.
Although this young man did, from
I saw your picture of some of those boys who seem to be in swimming togs, trunks, and so on. They look as
this young man had climbed the Himalayas,
mm-hmm.
Rick Ridgway, and he is written up in the National Geographic. And in the hot sun, you see, on the ship,
mm-hmm.
This boy doesn't have any coat on. You can see
mm-hmm.
that it would be like summer.
Uh-huh.
But the wind was kind of cold, but on the other hand, this was a sheltered
yes.
place.
Maybe it's like skiing, where they, in the sun, they can be warm enough to go without some of their outer clothing.
You're right.
Mm-hmm. How long were you on the trip altogether?
I was away 3 weeks, mm-hmm. but I was on the ship 10 days going and 10 days returning. That would be 20.
Mm-hmm.
We flew from St. Louis the day before. You couldn't get out of Decatur. I flew to St. Louis and Miami, where they wanted us overnight in the motel there at the airport so that we could leave on the Argentina airline at 10 the next morning. We had a tour of Buenos Aires.
Mm-hmm.
It was my third time there. I wasn't really too particular about going there again, but I was glad that we had this tour, because Glenn and I sat in a park, a Spanish park with lovely tiles, and had a delightful time, and I got to see that again on this tour.
Back many memories.
See,
mm-hmm.
of my happy
yes.
life, married
mm-hmm.
life.
Mm-hmm. So you flew, where did you say you got the ship? Where were you?
Right there in the harbor.
at Buenos Aires.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And then you flew back. The ship brought you back there, and you flew back to the United States from there.
Yes. Yeah. Going down, we stopped briefly in Colombia, and one way, and in Brazil the other way, which was pleasant. But of course, we couldn't do any sightseeing. Mm-hmm. We were just there for the plane to stop and refuel, and you could go in and buy souvenirs.
Yes. Why do you think most of these people were going on the trip? Was it just for pleasure or study, or what was their main motivation, do you think?
Well, all of these people were widely traveled. It's the reason any of them were interesting to talk to. Mm-hmm. They'd all been almost everywhere. Mm-hmm. In fact, my roommate...
Even though they were, some of them, very young.
Yes. Uh-huh. My roommate... I'm not sure about that. Some of those that were very young. Yeah, they'd traveled widely. Mm-hmm. Was a graduate of the University of Wisconsin. Came to Denver as a bride. I'm a graduate of the University of Denver, and came to Decatur as a bride. Mm-hmm. And we were roommates.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine.
That was an interesting experience.
I was going to visit her, but I've had to cancel out since I'm having this work done.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know it was going to be delayed so long, my bathroom being tiled.
So they were really mainly for their own pleasure and own knowledge, not scientists working on any special project.
Some of them were. Some of them were.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that they were giving any credit for these lectures, but they did give us, whenever they gave a talk, where they gave us these papers.
Mm-hmm. Does this organization sponsor similar trips on scientific expeditions?
Yes. They did want me to go to the Galapagos, and they want me to go to China, but I've seen enough of the world.
I've only been
to Hong Kong.
Uh-huh.
But, the Galapagos has the only penguin that is adapted to the tropics.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, because of the Humboldt current, it's a little cool there. Yeah. It isn't too hot.
Yeah. Well, do you think that we have covered most of the experiences in the...
The highlights.
The highlights.
Oh, you're lovely to talk to.
It's been a marvelous experience even to hear about secondhand. And I'm sure that everyone would feel that you really have had an extraordinary experience, and that you have brought it back to us too. And we certainly thank you for giving us this review of your trip to the Antarctic.
Oh, Betty Tarnell, it was a pleasure. And I'm so glad to get better acquainted with you.
Well, fine.
Since I know your brother.
Yes. Well, thank you very much. You have been listening to the experiences of Mrs. Mildred England, and this is Betty Tarnell recording for the Decatur. This is Betty Tarnell speaking for the Decatur Public Library. Once again, we have as our guest Mrs. Mildred England, and today she will talk to us about that polar complex.
After returning from a tour of the farthest north civilians can get by ship, we were invited to a wedding reception, where the punch was of a greenish hue with white sherbet piled high in the center like the frozen heart of Greenland. We were immediately asked, why go there? Because, I answered, it's the world's largest island. So what? Came back the quick reply. My husband added, it's the land closest to the North Pole. The questioner shrugged as he was enveloped by another group of close relatives and friends of the bridegroom. It was useless at a stand-up party to discuss our exhilarating experience. Must Americans be urged by advertising before deciding where to go? My husband wrote to Copenhagen and received this information, which pleased him. If you have had enough of being queued into buses for a visit to art museums, castles, and cathedrals, and would enjoy 2 weeks on a ship up and down Baffin Bay, come to Greenland. There are no roads between towns, so passengers can watch the loading and unloading of freight by the crew or visit each town en route. In the winter, helicopters are used, as snowmobiles or dog teams might fall into crevices. We were 5 Danes and a Dutch woman, though there was an American mineralogist who was working on an assignment. We were without a tour guide, and each passenger was responsible for retrieving his own luggage from the SAS plane and seeing that it got to a U.S. Air Force bus to be taken on a mile ride to the harbor. We then boarded a landing craft like used on the coast of Normandy, D-Day. When the end was closed, we started for the ship, and our bags were lifted by a huge hook to top deck in a hammock. Food was cafeteria style, and books of tickets for 3 meals were handed to us, as well as directions to our berth. Breakfast consisted of canned juice, hard roll, pumpernickel, cheese, butter, jelly, and 2 cups of coffee. Lunch was soup and a Danish smorgasbord of 3 cocktail-sized shrimp on an orange slice, pickled fish or smoked salmon on cross sections of apple, a hard-boiled egg, and a glass of milk. Dinner meant hot meat, vegetable, and potato again, and whole dried milk, which tasted like fresh milk. If you cared for Danish pastry or pudding, it was extra, but we did without as had plenty. Once we had razorback duck, and for Sunday dinner, venison. On the dock at Gotha, the capital, we saw oranges and crates from the outspan of South Africa, and apples from Australia, which pleased us as we had seen them growing in Tasmania, and knew the harbor at Hobart was one of the world's finest. Wheat, vegetables, and butter were from Copenhagen, as well as the meat, and ready for delivery to towns along the coast. There was also wood for building houses, plumbing supplies, and glass for windows. No grain can ripen on Greenland, and there are no trees, so these supplies are brought in by plane every Wednesday. On the ship, there was a doctor and a nurse who visited clinics while we explored towns. A judge was busy too at each stop settling disputes, as there are no prisons and none seem to be needed. The only churches we noticed are like those in Denmark, Lutheran, with a state-supported minister. Holsenborg is called a dog frontier town because it is on the Arctic Circle, and you can see 5 or 6 separated from each other but securely chained. "That's cruel," said the woman from Holland, pardon me, "but it isn't, because they would tear each other to pieces if they could, because they are half wolf that Eskimos in ancient times discovered could be harnessed and used for transportation over frozen wasteland." At Jacobshaven can be seen the world's largest ice glacier, as 20 millions of tons of ice a day break off from it and go into Baffin Bay, then down to Davis Strait and into the Atlantic. These chunks of glacier have caused many disasters in the North Atlantic. One day we stopped at the island of Disco to let off some Italian engineers who were to do some work for the Danes. I stood on the top deck watching the American engineer, who was using binoculars and a map of the coast. He made a red mark whenever he recognized rusty or blue spots on rocks. We are so far north that the mountains are beautifully bare, so minerals are easy to recognize. But it would be expensive to go after them, as a ship would have to be hired as well as a helicopter. On the island before us, you can see black coal seams between layers of limestone 4 billion years old. The black basalt you see rounded over the top is only 600 million years old, a mere yesterday. "How could the young rock get on top?" I asked. "Because Greenland is breaking away from the North American continent and going east and north." "Why?" I wanted to know. "It is on a different crustal plate," he replied. "As they part, some of the semi-molten mass below protrudes. You should go back to college and get a PhD, for you have an inquiring mind. At my age, I was astounded at his suggestion. Yes, he added, it's easier than you think. The mineralogist was about the age of our daughter. Luckily, Glenn was on the deck below taking a picture of the island, and it has become a prized possession. Later, I was telling the story to a woman who has suddenly become unattached. She spoke longingly. Why wasn't I along to meet him? You can't ever have him. He belongs to our memories. You will have to go and have your own experiences. She looked at me long and hard and did just that. Sold her home and started traveling alone and is now back from mainland China. Since returning, I have been thoroughly enjoyed Hapgood's Path of the Pole. He implies it is moving and once was centered in Greenland, and that explains why the heart is permanently frozen. One day the Danes and the Dutchwoman joined us to hire a cab to take us to the northern edge of Jacobshaven. From there we walked 3 kilometers to see the ice cap. Some of the rounded boulders had a covering here and there of blue-green algae, the oldest form of male and female life on the planet. In places a black lichen with long hairs was attempting to cling in a symbiotic relationship they have formed. They can then be covered by green mosses, and it makes some of the rocks look like upholstered footstools and made a soft place to rest. Because we were on permafrost with 24 hours of sunlight, pools of water about 4 inches in depth were frequent, so I was glad I had bought the heavy waterproof boots the day before, which were also interlined. This was what seeing the planet before God was thought of, and to look out on that awesome sight, hearing an occasional roar as chunks of ice fell off the glacier and floated in the void as icebergs. It was an unforgettable experience. We had a voyage over the weekend with some of the citizens of Gotthab to Umak, which is called the Pearl of Greenland. Smaller blue-white ice floated by like castles, boats, crowns, altars, swans, or anything you wish to see. The faces of all the passengers were ecstatic. Landing, we had an opportunity to taste this ancient blue white bubbly ice, which can be bought to send to friends who have everything to put into cocktails or highballs. Our furthest south stop was at Kappus Diglett. 500 years ago, the Scandinavians found grass growing and named the island, hoping to interest others to come here to live. But an ancient burial place with stones in a mound where the settlement was started are all that is left. A skeleton has proved that death was from starvation. The shape of the stones is the same as at St. Anthony, Newfoundland, across the strait, where the climate is milder. This was prior to the landing of Columbus. Back once again to Gotthab, where we were put up in the hotel while our ship took a few passengers to the SAS plane, who had been on a shorter visit to Greenland, but all must return to Copenhagen, regardless of where they lived. There was a city bus that played folk songs so Greenlanders could sing on way to and from work or shopping. We had no broadcasts in English, but the Danish friends kept us informed as to when meals were served, and occasionally we could understand one word of the news. It was Kissinger. We visited the museum to see the skeleton of a narwhale, now almost extinct. Kayaks are used in Alaska for hunting seals and walrus. And some brown woolen material similar to the coat I was wearing and which I left in Greenland for the elderly widows who share a home with orphan children. It was a wraparound style that would fit any number of sizes and had a high standing collar and belt that would aid in keeping out the fierce winds. The ladies smiled their thanks. At Sondre Stromford, the airport, we saw about 50 children who were to spend a year at school in Danish homes. There was no adult to supervise them, yet all were well behaved. When it was announced the plane would be delayed an hour, the cafeteria manager spoke, "Line up for a light lunch." I asked the Danish school teacher who had accompanied us on the walk to the ice cap, "How come no pushing and no boisterous manners, though you can tell they are brimming over with pep?" He replied, "They are ready to enter the fifth grade and should be able to take care of themselves." I think your Greenlanders are happy because they are accepted and eat the same food, can buy the same clothes, and get the same education. "Yes," he replied, "if they are capable of a college education, they can have it too, but must go again to Copenhagen." Skinner says in Beyond Freedom and Dignity, "It is better to be well-behaved than good." Not everyone would agree with him, but I do. Is it due to the assorted greens, rutabagas, and other yellow vegetables, as well as liver now and then, that my system is so filled with iron I can feel the magnetic pull of the poles, almost as though I were a rubber band? The words of John Fowles return, "Man is an existence between two ice-twinned poles." It doesn't bother me to be included in his first word, because I know he means all human beings. I saw no birds at the uttermost part of the world, and none at the uppermost. It was early August, but the sky was already darkening with fog settling over the planet's largest island. Yet I felt elated and hopeful for the future as my father's couplet came to mind, even though I don't understand what he referred to when he wrote, "If hope has wings, may its onward flight range high above the darkness of the night." William Henry Coulter.
Thank you so much, Mrs. England. We really appreciate your sharing these travel reminiscences with us. And I'd like to read a letter that you received from Professor Dan Guillory of Millikan University. This was written when he was on sabbatical leave at the University of Chicago. And he says, I believe you sent this manuscript to him, and he says, "Dear Mrs. England, sorry I took so long. There are some fine descriptive passages in this piece. Try sending it to a travel or vacation magazine. Best wishes in your future travels and readings. You are one of the most human and interesting people I've met in Decatur. Warmest regards, Dan Guillory." Well, we certainly agree with Professor Guillory, Mrs. England, that you are one of the most human and interesting people in Decatur, and we thank you for sharing your reminiscences with us. This is Betty Trunell speaking for the Decatur Public Library.